This is our fifth Sunday, one of our months with five Sundays, and so normally you expect to listen to somebody else besides me on that fifth Sunday. In fact, George Monreal was scheduled to speak for us this evening, but George and Sophia wanted us to make it known that the Spanish work in Bradenton has needed them, and they feel an obligation to help with that for the time being, and he's trying to do some speaking there and helping, I think, even with the song leading and those kinds of things. And so as a result, at least for the time being, they're not able to worship here with us. So you're going to have to listen to me. So don't everybody just clear out now. Put up with it. It's too late. But I wanted to talk with you, if I could, this evening about some lessons that we learn from the fifth chapter of John's Gospel. When you look over at John chapter 5, one of the things that differs from John's Gospel from the Synoptic Gospels is that, unlike the Synoptic Gospels that focus in upon Jesus' ministry in Galilee, John's Gospel focuses in upon those occasions when Jesus would come to Jerusalem for the various pilgrimage feasts and other kinds of feasts that were held on an annual basis. And John focuses in on those discourses that Jesus has, those conversations sometimes that Jesus has, right there in Jerusalem, right in the temple grounds, very often, with those religious leaders who were opposing Jesus. And there are some very frank and candid discussions that you see there. In John chapter 5, verses 19 through the end of the chapter, this is one example of a discourse like this that Jesus has. And it's all in response to the criticism that is beginning to be raised about this so-called prophet from Galilee, who speaks of God as his father, implying there's some special relationship that he seems to have with God, his father. And he speaks of himself as the son, and so he almost makes himself equal with God. At least that's how it seemed. And Jesus said a lot of things that, yeah, sure seemed to put himself on par with the Father. And so Jesus responds to all of this in John chapter 5, beginning with verse 19. May I just read for you, starting with verse 19 through the end of the chapter. You can read along with me if you'd like, or just sit back and listen and just see if you can imagine Jesus now saying these words to the Jews there in the temple grounds so many centuries ago. "Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself unless it is something he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, these things the Son also does in like manner. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all things that he himself is doing. And greater works than these will he show him, that you may marvel. For just as the Father raises the dead and gives life, even so the Son also gives life to whom he wishes. For not even the Father judges anyone, but he has given all judgment to the Son, in order that all may honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life, and does not come into judgment, but has passed out of death into life. Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear shall live. For just as the Father has life in himself, even so he gave to the Son also to have life in himself. And he gave him authority to execute judgment, because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this. For an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs shall hear his voice and shall come forth, those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life, those who committed the evil deeds to to a resurrection of judgment. I can do nothing on my own initiative. As I hear, I judge. And my judgment is just, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of him who sent me. If I alone bear witness of myself, my testimony is not true. There is another who bears witness of me, and I know that the testimony which he bears of me is true. You have sent to John, and he has borne witness to the truth. They said, therefore, but the witness which I receive is not from man, but I say these things that you may be saved. He, John, was the lamp that was burning and was shining, and you were willing to rejoice for a while in his light. But the witness which I have is greater than that of John. For the works which the Father has given me to accomplish, the very works that I do bear witness of me, that the Father has sent me. And the Father who sent me, he has borne witness of me. You have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his form. And you do not have his word abiding in you, for you do not believe in him whom he has sent. You search the scriptures, because you think that in them you have eternal life. And it is these that bear witness of me. And you are unwilling to come to me, that you may have life. I do not receive glory from men, but I know you that you do not have the love of God in yourselves. I have come in my Father's name, and you do not receive me. If another shall come in his own name, you receive him. How can you believe when you receive glory from one another, and you do not seek the glory that is from the one and only God? Do not think that I will accuse you before the Father. The one who accuses you is Moses, in whom you have set your hope. For if you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote of me. But if you do not believe his writings, how will you believe my words? That's a marvelous discourse from Jesus. There's an awful lot there, a lot of things that we could focus our attention on. We make three observations that Jesus makes, three statements that Jesus makes in this discourse that I think summarize some of these main points that Jesus is getting at. I want us to think about these things. First of all, Jesus says to us that the Father, God, has given all judgment to the Son. He talked in these verses that we just read about the fact there is going to be a judgment. There is going to be a judgment day. There is going to be a time when the Son shall call for the dead to rise, and indeed all of the dead will obey the Son and will arise, some to everlasting life and some to everlasting judgment. Folks, there is going to be a judgment. And we live in a world where people just don't want to accept that. A lot of people want to accept the idea that there is some kind of heavenly reward, some kind of afterlife, some kind of positive thing that we can look forward to. But the idea of some kind of judgment, some kind of recompense for the choices that we make in rebellion against what God has said, people don't like to hear that. People don't want to accept that. But Jesus affirmed, first of all, there is going to be a judgment day. There is. You know, we're talking, Patty and I were talking this morning after services about certain religious groups that actually have as their doctrine that there is no such thing as hell. There is no real concept of eternal judgment. In fact, the idea that they have is just this idea that somehow those who are condemned by God as sinners are just going to be annihilated, or those sinners are just going to cease to exist, but no kind of punishment. Now the righteous, they'll continue and abide forever in joy and bliss, but those whom God reckons as sinners, They're just going to be judged in the sense that they cease to exist, and that's all there is. And Patty made the statement to me, said, you know, that's not much of a deterrent to me. And I think he made a good observation. In fact, the idea that somehow there is not going to be some judgment, it just doesn't square with what Jesus says here. In verses 28 and 29, I'll read them to you again. He says, "Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs shall hear his voice and shall come forth, those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life, those who committed the evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment." Everybody's going to be raised from the dead, folks. Everybody's going to be raised from the dead. But some are going to be bodily raised from the dead and transformed into that eternal state where they can experience then all of the joys that God has promised in that world to come. But others, Jesus said, they're going to be raised from the dead too. They're going to be bodily raised, and I would assume he means transformed, in order to receive all of that eternal judgment condemnation that was being promised to. There is no way that you can read these verses here and what Jesus says here and think that there's not going to be anything like hell, like some eternal place of punishment or some eternal kind of punishment. There's no way you can read these verses and come away and think that he's just talking about people who are wicked ceasing to exist. No, he says they're going to be resurrected so they can experience judgment. You don't need to resurrect somebody whom you're just going to annihilate so they cease to exist. That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But you do need to resurrect somebody so they can experience that eternal judgment. And that's what Jesus says. Everybody's going to be raised. Some will be raised unto eternal life, and some will be raised unto eternal judgment. And we need to appreciate that's what Jesus says. And Jesus says that the Father has given this judgment to the Son to administer. He's made Jesus the ultimate judge. And so one day, we are all going to be resurrected and, so to speak, stand before Jesus. The very one that we're reading about here. We're all going to see him. We're all going to stand before him. And he's going to be our judge. You know, that fact causes a lot of people to think, well, if Jesus is going to be my judge, well, Jesus is all about love, right? So his judgment really couldn't be severe, or he couldn't really just come down harshly on people, could he? That's what a lot of people tend to think. In fact, Jesus says in several of these discourses in John's gospel that I have not come now to judge the world, as if in this first advent of Jesus, the purpose for his coming was to judge everybody. No, he makes it very clear. I've come in this first advent to save people, to offer salvation to everyone. But Jesus makes it clear, I am going to return, and there is going to be a judgment. There is going to be a resurrection unto eternal judgment. And Jesus says, I'm going to administer it. And I don't think the fact that Jesus, as we read about him in the Gospels, he's compassionate and he's so loving and he's concerned about everybody and he's helping everybody. I don't read that and then think that, okay, then on judgment day, when people have heard, or after they have heard the compassionate Jesus give his teaching, and yet throughout their life they've just rejected it, I don't get the impression Jesus is going to be compassionate then. I get the impression then on judgment day it'll be too late. In fact, remember that statement that the Hebrew writer makes in Hebrews chapter 4, verses 14 and 15 at the end of the chapter, where he talks about the reason why Jesus can be such an effectual high priest for us is because he became a human being like us. He was tempted in all points as are we.
And so the Hebrew writer says, that's how he can be that mediator for us. He knows what we go through. But what I want you to understand is, and I think this is the point Jesus is wanting to make here, is that that also works on the other side of the coin. It works in reverse too. Because the very fact that Jesus became one of us and experienced what we go through and understands what it's like to live in this fleshly body with all of these desires and temptations and all the enticements of this world. And he knows what that's like. And he understands about how difficult it can be to serve God. He gets that from firsthand experiential knowledge. But that's also the very reason why Jesus isn't going to be fooled. He understands that, yes, it's sometimes tough for us to do the will of God, but he also understands we can do it if we just choose to. And these excuses that we make sometimes as to why we're not obeying God or why we're putting off obeying God or why we're doing this and that, all these excuses that we rationalize in our own minds, Jesus has been right where we're at, and he had to follow God's teaching with all of its difficulty. And he knows good and well, yes, it can be done. And he came to this earth and lived as one of us to offer us that opportunity for forgiveness, for salvation. And if we then spurn all of that, do we really think on Judgment Day that he's just going to say, well, you know, it was probably so tough for you. Okay. You know, one reason why teenagers have a hard time snowing their parents when it just comes to that face-to-face confrontation. Teenagers, by the way, can deceive their parents by keeping things from them. Okay, teens are pretty good at that. But the reason why it's tough for teens to look at their parents and have this kind of confrontation and debate with them and explain why they did what they did and snow their parents about that. Usually the reason why it's difficult for them to do that is because the parents have been there before and they tried the same kind of snow job on their parents. Didn't work then either. Jesus has been where we're at. And the one who's going to judge us on that last day is someone that we can't snow, that we can't deceive, that we can't rationalize deceive with our own rationalization. He sees through all that. Not just because he's omniscient, but because he's been there, he's experienced the very thing that we go through, and he knows good and well, yes, we could have done what was right. We just chose not. So that's the first thing that strikes me as I think about what Jesus says here, that God has given all judgment to the Son. There's also something else that Jesus emphasizes here. He says, God has borne witness of me. He starts out in these verses by making a startling statement that if I bore witness of myself alone, then my testimony would not be true. And I take him to mean by that anybody can just come on the scene and claim to be somebody great, and the mere fact that they claim it with no other corroboration, no other testimony from somebody else to back it up, well, that doesn't make that person's own self-testimony and self-affirmation worthy of being accepted as true. And Jesus acknowledges that. If I just came on the scene and said, I'm the Son of God, well, that in and of itself wouldn't prove anything. But Jesus says, someone else bears witness of me. And already has been bearing witness of me, Jesus says. He, first of all, in these verses that we just read, he says, now, I'm not talking about John the Baptist. He says, now I could talk about John the Baptist and his testimony, and we even talked about that this morning a little bit in our class, and certainly John bore witness to Jesus, and he saw the Spirit descending upon him in the form of a dove and all of that. And so Jesus acknowledges, yes, John gave some testimony corroborating me, but Jesus says, that's not who I'm talking about.
No, the witness that I'm talking about, who corroborates my own testimony, is someone greater than John. He says the Father himself has borne witness and confirmed my claim. What are you talking about, Jesus?
Jesus says the very works that I do, these bear witness to me. That's the Father's testimony. These miraculous works that I do. That's what confirms God's own confirmation, God's own corroboration to assert and attest to the fact that what I'm claiming about myself, even what was so shocking to the Jews of Jesus' day, that he talks about himself as if he has some special relationship with God, his Father, as if he's virtually equal with God. God himself, by means of the miracles that he was performing through the hand of Jesus, God was confirming everything he's telling you. It's the truth. Jesus says, the Father has borne witness of me. And that's a far greater witness and a far greater corroboration than even John himself could give me. But then Jesus goes on and makes this point. He says, the problem is you don't believe me. You don't believe me, he says in verse 38. You don't believe the one whom the Father has sent into the world. Despite the miraculous works, and Jesus sure did a lot of them. The Gospel of John records 7 of these great miracles that it focuses attention on, 8 counting his resurrection, but of course, John is just plucking those out for special attention. The fact of the matter is, as the synoptics make very clear, Jesus just did hundreds and hundreds of miracles and miraculous signs and healings, and yet Jesus says here, you don't believe me. And the way he words that is particularly striking to me. Literally what he says in verse 38 is, you do not believe him whom the Father has sent. I shorten that for the slide to you don't believe me. But he doesn't just say, you don't believe in me. The Bible talks about people believing in Jesus. That kind of suggests the idea of putting their hope and their trust in him and becoming his disciple and all of that commitment. Jesus just makes a more succinct statement. He says, you don't believe me. In other words, that's the kind of statement that we make when we talk about not believing what somebody says. I don't believe you. Jesus says, you don't believe me. You don't believe what I say. You don't accept what I say is truth. And Jesus makes this observation, which I think is so interesting as he talks about all of this. He says in verse 43, I have come in my Father's name and you do not receive me. If another shall come in his own name, you will receive him. Isn't that what we do as human beings? People can just assert themselves as some kind of authority to us and we just accept it. It amazes me how often students, college students, they'll just take something that Professor So-and-so says. Well, it's because it's Professor So-and-so. And so he said this, and so that's just gospel truth. We just accept that. We accept what people say about anything. Just, well, it's because of so-and-so claims this, and or people read it in books, or people go online. My goodness, if you read something online, it's got to be true, right? I mean, all that, nobody would ever say anything false on the internet, or surely not. We just accept things all the time just by somebody coming on the scene and saying, well, this is true, and we don't expect any kind of corroboration or confirmation. There's a lot of things that we just accept. In fact, we even accept our own statements just because we've said them. A lot of people that, you know, talk with
about various religious views and things, and I've had people say this to me over the years. I remember one time a man gave me his religious theology that he, I believe this, what the Bible is saying. And I said, well, show me in the Bible where the Bible teaches what you are saying. And he just said, well, I can't point to a particular passage, but the Bible just teaches it. And I said, well, but there's got to be some passage you can show me. Well, it's just my years of reading, and this is just kind of, you know, what I've derived from it, you know. And basically, it was just kind of like, okay, this was his view, and he couldn't really show you any place where the Bible said that or any place that caused him to conclude that, but this is just his overall sense and what he's kind of gotten from all this. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, you have a real good estimation of yourself then. You're the standard. And that's kind of the way a lot of people are, you know. They're the ultimate standard. This seems like this would be correct, and so that's what I accept. And don't even talk about all the times when we make statements like, well, you know, they say that blah, 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 you know, and I was wondering, well, who's the they that we all keep quoting? You know, they say. Somebody out there says it, and people believe it. And that's what Jesus is alluding to, it seems to me, that somebody comes in just his own name, his own authority, and you accept it. And Jesus says, here I've come, not merely in my own name, but here's the Father himself who is performing all these miraculous works through me. So here's all this confirmation from God himself. That's a pretty good corroborating witness, and yet you don't believe me. You just don't believe. Do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? Well, many of the miracles just aren't adequate enough. Maybe that's why people don't believe. Maybe there's just not enough miracles. Maybe the quality of the miraculous evidence just isn't good enough. You think maybe that's the problem? I have a book in my office. It's written by one of the world-renowned gospel scholars in our day. Dale Allison Jr. is his name. Outstanding scholar, as reputable as you can be. Wrote a book on the resurrection of Jesus and looking at the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus. And basically he just kind of goes through all this evidence and he gets to the end of the book and his conclusion about all of this is, you can make a good case that Jesus really was raised from the dead and that, yes, this tomb was empty. And you can make a good case, but it's just not adequate enough. And so I'm agnostic on the question. And that's what the whole book was. So basically what Allison is saying is, just don't quite have enough evidence there to just tip the scales in favor of let's believe Jesus and believe in him and believe his resurrection and accept all of his teaching. Just don't have quite, got some evidence there. It's just not quite enough. And so, we'll just have to acknowledge that that's just the way it is. Can't disprove it. Not enough to say he's not who he claimed to be, but just not quite enough to tip the scales in favor. So we'll just have to be neutral. And, okay, if that's what you think, but, you know, by your own conclusion then, you're acknowledging that, you know, after you die, you just might wake up from your slumber of death and the person who awakened you just might be Jesus of Nazareth. And of course, if he's the one whom you're then going to face on that real judgment day, it's too late then. is there really not enough evidence? Is that really the problem? Jesus said that the problem goes a little bit deeper. Jesus said in verse 40, "You are unwilling to come to me." That's what Jesus said the problem was. He said the problem isn't that, well, I've just come in my own name, so there's not corroboration, because, no, the Father has borne witness by means of these miracles. And it's not, Jesus says, that, well, these miracles are just really not adequate enough. Jesus says the real problem is you. You don't want it to be true. You don't want it to be true. You don't want to accept this. You don't want to believe me. Could that be true of you? Could that be true of us? Is it that we just don't want to accept Jesus? Could that be the problem here? You know, when Jesus makes this statement in verse 38, "You do not believe me," I don't think he's just talking about, you don't believe me in what I claim about myself. I think he's talking about, you don't believe me in what I say about other things too. There's a whole lot of things I'm saying that you don't believe. One of those things is what we've already talked about, where Jesus says, "I, the Son, am the one who the Father has given all judgment to, and I'm going to judge you on the last day." You don't believe that. Okay. But there's a lot of things, folks, that people who say that they believe in Jesus and accept him as the Son of God, there's a lot of things that he says that they really just don't believe. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't believe what Jesus says you need to do in order to be saved, to become one of his disciples. And immediately, you know, when you start talking about that, some people just kind of bristle, "Ah, here we go again, we're going to get in that controversial stuff." But you know, when it comes right down to it, if Jesus said that a person needs to believe in him and be baptized to be saved, if that's what Jesus said and you don't accept that, then what that really means is you don't believe Jesus. And really what that means when you say you don't believe somebody, either you're saying they're mistaken about what they're saying, or you're calling them a liar. Was Jesus mistaken about what you need to do to be saved? Did he just make a mistake there? Slip of the tongue, or he was, it had been a long day, he was confused, you know, and maybe said, he misspoke, like the politicians, you know. You know, then the next day their campaign managers come out and clarify what they really meant to say, you know. Was this Jesus misspeaking here? I don't think any of us really think that. Well, then the only other option is you're really saying he's a liar. Well, nobody wants to just come right out and say that. That sounds too harsh, doesn't it? But when you don't believe Jesus, that's really what it amounts to. That's really what you're saying, in effect. You don't believe him. Or how about what Jesus teaches in the Sermon on the Mount? You know, where Jesus just sets the bar so high and says, this is the standard you need to be striving to live by. Not that Jesus says we're all going to successfully live by that standard, but Jesus nevertheless says, this is where the bar is. Not where the scribes and Pharisees set it down low, but this is where the bar is. You need to do all these things the way your Father in heaven would do them. That's how you need to be thinking. That's how you need to act. God himself and his level of righteousness, that's your moral standard. Jesus says, that's the way it is. And if I am not going to live by that standard, if I'm not even going to try to live by that standard, what it really means is, I don't believe Jesus. I just don't believe. In effect, I'm really calling him a liar. And that's what Jesus says to these people here. He says, let's just lay it on the line. You don't believe me. And is that really the way it is with us? Do we just not think Jesus is trustworthy, is truthful? When we live our lives contrary to what Jesus said, contrary to the things that Jesus said, when our principles or our standard is somewhere different than what Jesus said, then the words of Jesus here are applicable to us. It's as if Jesus is looking us in our eye and just saying to us, dead on, you don't believe me. That's the problem. And as he said to these Jews 2,000 years ago, the reason why you don't believe me, it's because you're unwilling to. The evidence is there. The corroboration is there. You just don't want to accept. And so that's the way people are. Pretty straightforward teaching from Jesus. As usual, Jesus just says it flat out, makes it real clear. What about you and me? Do you believe that one day you're going to stand before Jesus on Judgment Day? One day he's going to call forth the dead to rise from their graves, some unto everlasting life and some under everlasting judgment. Do you believe Jesus when he said that? Are you living like you believe that? If you're not, then Jesus says, you don't believe me, you don't believe the Father who confirmed what I'm saying by means of the miracles. You don't believe me or my Father. So if there's someone here tonight who needs to make their life right with Jesus, believe him. Trust what he says. The confirmation is there. And you make your life right with God. Let us help you any way that we can while together we stand and sing. Won't you come?